Article 1 of the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights states that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. Hi, I'm Zach Poole, and you're listening to the Article 1 podcast. Article 1 is a magazine dedicated to documenting and examining some of the human rights issues Canadians and people around the world face today. It's published by Mount Royal University Journalism Students in Calgary. This series is produced as part of the Community Podcast Initiative and powered by Shaw. Mount Royal sits on Treaty 7 territory, a region with a rich culture and history and a long tradition of storytelling. At Article 1, we respect and admire those stories and are committed to collaborating with First Peoples in our work. We acknowledge the hereditary keepers of these lands, the Nitsitipi, Iyahe Nakoda, Sutina, and Métis peoples. In this episode of the Article 1 podcast, we're going to take a closer look at the Canadian airline system. Today, I will be talking to Terence Hong. Terence has flown many times in his life and has experienced some of the most common air travel issues firsthand. Can I just get you to start off with kind of giving me your background with flying and, you know, if you've had any issues with airlines?
So I've flown actually quite a bit, I would say, domestically and internationally. You know, living in Canada, you often fly Air Canada, right? So that's why I was saying it's a little bit of a joke when they say, you know, we know you have a choice in airlines, because you know, I certainly didn't. So it all started when I was a student. I'm a student at Queen's, and I lived on campus, but my parents were in BC, so in Victoria. So I would fly from Victoria to Vancouver, Vancouver to Toronto, Toronto to Kingston, and back. I would say at least two or three times a year at that point. So I would fly, you know, at peak seasons, at not so peak seasons, go back for a medical school interview at UBC, right? So I think I've got a pretty good random sample of, you know, just of how, you know, Air Canada or Canadian Airlines are in general, I would say, especially with respect to, like, you know, delays or, you know, cancellations or anything like that. And that was pre-pandemic, just for the record, right? During the pandemic, I don't think I ever flew. I think I flew like a week before the pandemic was real, or like, you know, before, you know, we realized it was real. And, but then since then, a lot of my post pandemic traveling, or like post kind of 2020, was international, right? So I went on a trip with, our entire company to Italy, last year. I think we had like 14 people flying together. And what was interesting was just the stark contrast between the EU compensation and delays and that sort of thing with what is kind of brand new, right, in Canada that they had to put in, you know, after the pandemic. So I'll go into a little bit more detail maybe about that. So we were flying to Italy, and then on the way back, there were delays, right? There were delays even boarding, so it was no surprise that there would be a delay upon arriving, right? So I previously heard about flying in Europe, right, from a friend and colleague of mine, and it was actually WestJet at that point. He was delayed for a certain amount of time, and then he just filed, basically, I think EU, but 241 or something, or I don't know the number, right? But there's an actual, you know, bylaw, right, where, you know, the EU, regardless of what carrier you are, you could be, you know, an Australian carrier flying out of EU, you could be, you know, WestJet, you could be Air Canada, like, they really don't care, right? They make sure that you abide by the rules of the EU, which protects passengers, right? So he had a delay, and he wasn't expecting much either, but he actually made a claim, and he got it back. Right, like, they didn't fight it or anything, because the EU commissioned that kind of oversees this stuff. I guess they're really harsh on the airlines. WestJet didn't even fight it. They just gave the full amount back. They just cut them a check or thing or something. I don't know what it was. So we actually invoked the same, the exact same thing this time, right? And it was for a flight out of Rome back to Toronto. It was boarding late. And then obviously if you're boarding late, you're going to arrive late, right? And that what's the interesting thing about the EU is that they judge based on the original arrival time, right? So they don't say like, oh yeah, if if you start late, you're going to arrive late, that's okay. Like they judge you based on, if the trains run on time, the planes run on time in this case, right? So I thought that was fascinating. I've had two claims since the pandemic, kind of travel opened up. And the first one was this EU one, right? And Air Canada still, denied it, right? You show them the, regulation, they deny it. They try to just really shrug it off. And then what's interesting is we even have like video footage, right, of not being able to deplane, just by a few minutes, by the way, right, for the record. But if it's after 3 hours and you were entitled to it, we're gonna try to file for that, right? So they kind of just deny it, right? That's their tactic, I think, with all these claims. So we're just going through the EU to, hopefully get some of that back, right? And it's quite a bit, as you can imagine, for what, 12, 14 people, right? So we'll see how it goes. But the same kind of message, I think, in my mind is clear, is that the carriers don't have to, like, they can drag their feet, and there's like really no penalty in doing so. At least in Canada, from what I understand. In the EU, I get the sense they do penalize them, but in a lot of cases, I think maybe people just give up, right? There's some attrition on the side of consumers, right? So they just count on that, and they probably just, some statistician probably tells them it's the right thing to do, right? So that's the first one, and the contrast in, I think, what the regulations say and how, I've experienced them, or I at least have seen them, protect consumers is actually quite different, right, than what is Canada, the Canadian regulations. I think the Canadian regulations are kind of just meant to be there, right? So to say that something's there, but there's really no teeth, to how the government actually invokes them, how they punish, the airlines, right? So while the regulations, right, and the governments kind of treat them differently, I think the Canadian one really, it's like, one, they're new, right? They're brand new from what I understand, just like a few months old at this point, right? They have to change them, right, quite a few times because it sounds like the carriers, were kind of finding loopholes around them. The what remains the same though, in my experience so far, is that Air Canada kind of just like drags their feet, right? It's just that in the EU, they seem to not be able to get away with it, nearly as well, right? My Canadian claim is rather simple. It's rather cut and dry, right? So, me and my wife were flying back to BC to attend my cousin's wedding, and the flight was just late by 6 hours, right? And the comical part here is that the regulations had like recently changed. I think they changed in April, I believe, and I was flying, I think, in June. Don't quote me on that. I forget exactly when, but. Long story short is that if it is a reason within the airline's control, such as, staffing issues, right? Maintenance issues, right? These things are kind of deemed to be, their problem if you're running an airline, right? You're supposed to be compensated, right? But what was interesting was, you would get texts as a passenger, throughout the delay, right? And they would say like, oh, due to XYZ, due to XYZ, XYZ. And then like 5 minutes before the actual boarding of our flight, they then changed it to something like, outside of our control. But in Canada, I don't think there's an easy way to determine, for the record, officially, what the delay was caused by. The idea that, the burden of proof is on the prosecution, right? I know in theory that should be how it works, but in this case, it's quite different because you're selling something in advance, right? You've taken the money, right? And then it's the onus of the person who bought that, the consumer, to prove you wrong before you refund people. That's ridiculous, right? Imagine going to a restaurant, right? You and me, we booked a restaurant to celebrate whatever, okay? And we paid in advance, right? And because they didn't have staff, right? They didn't have waiters, they didn't have a chef, right? They canceled our thing, right? And then what I then have to do all the sleuthing and the emailing and taking the small claims court to get my refund, right? That's nonsense, right? So, and that's the system we have set up, right? They know that.
Can I maybe get you to kind of give your opinion or your experience on, groups like the air passenger rights? What's your
Yeah, yeah.
perspective on that sort of thing?
Yeah. So there's various programs and that sort of thing for this. And I've actually tried out. I tried one called AirHelp, and it was just complete, it was disaster, right? It was just it didn't do what I was hoping. I was more than happy to pay them a cut. They just couldn't get their act together, right? But there's groups like this Air Passengers Right things, and the fact that so many people have stumbled upon it tells me that really that's just the tip of the iceberg of people, right? What are the chances, you're gonna, go search for something? What are the chances you find it? What are the chances that, you then go answer the questions or whatever, that they have on there to gate it and actually get into the group, right? So that's really just, I think, a very small fraction of people who are affected, right? The fact that this group exists tells me, again, the system's very broken, right? If you have to crowdsource that kind of sleuth, everyone has to kind of kind of come together and, form a kind of crowdsourced paralegal, right, kind of system, right? That it just tells me that the system's broken, right? And of course, they can't even keep up with the questions and answers, right? You've seen that yourself, I'm sure, right? So it just tells me that fundamentally the regulations are broken. They don't work, right? And if there were someone, if there were some paralegal group who wanted to start a business, a kind of cottage industry around this, there's an ample opportunity because there's a problem to solve there, right? So I think those groups are great. I mean, the fact that they exist and are needed is it's just indicative of the fact that, the fundamentals, right? The whole premise of these regulations, right, and bylaws, they're flawed.
Absolutely. And do you mind if I ask how you came across the Facebook group initially?
I'm pretty sure I probably posted something angry about Air Canada, and then it was suggested to me. So, in some ways, you got to thank Facebook, right, for their predictive abilities.
Kind of the last topic I wanted to touch on here. To what degree and how much time do you think people should be spending to get their money?
So that's a good question, right? I would say this. I would say, objectively speaking, Zach, if you're a young professional and you're busy, and let's just say you have limited free time, and I don't know, maybe you bill by the hour, right? At some point, it does not make sense. You just kind of have to chalk it up as a loss, right? Because the amount of time you spend could be just an inordinate amount that does not, it's not proportional to the, whatever $600 you might get back, right? But it's also for me a matter of principle, right? But if you want to be objective about it, I think for a lot of people, it makes more sense to just, chalk it up as a loss and move on, frankly. Right? Like if you even, even if you make minimum wage, like there's a point at which it does not make sense, because going through all those small claims court, reading about how you actually even do that, right? I've never filed something in small claims court, right? Have you? Like, you know what I mean? Like most people haven't. Then you go to that flight passenger group, you're reading through all this stuff. Again, like you're just kind of like doing a mini crash course in kind of paralegal work, right? So I think like for a lot of people, it doesn't make sense. And they know that. Again, like just going back to this, like I refuse to believe the PR team and the media team, the marketing team at Air Canada and WestJet and these like large national carriers, I refuse to believe that they don't know this. They know, right? They know that it's just like it's a statistics game, right? That most people, with time and attrition, they're just going to forget about it, right? And the few that actually, get through, they're going to still drag their feet, right? And then until the last second when they have to pay you what they owe you, right? So I think like for a lot of people, unfortunately, it's set up such that it's rigged, right? It makes sense to almost give in most times, but hopefully people don't. But the thing is, like the fact that they have to sometimes is just a little bit sad.
Thank you to today's guest, Terrence Hong. You've been listening to the Article One podcast. Thanks for listening. Article One is a human rights magazine published by Mount Royal University Journalism and Digital Media students in Calgary. You can find us online at article-one.ca. That's the number one. This series is produced as part of the Community Podcast Initiative, empowered by Shaw. Thanks to the artist Broke for Free for our theme. The song is Daybird off their Directionless EP. My name is Zach Poole. Thanks for listening.